Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. The 2015 General Assembly is off to an uneven start thanks to winter storms, but already there's been heated debate about business incentives, the gas tax, and marriage equality. Here to talk about those issues and education and the push for Medicaid expansion is Representative Susan Fisher from Buncombe County. Representative Fisher, thanks for being with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
It's my pleasure.
A lot to talk about in the opening weeks of this General Assembly session, despite the weather. Let's start with an issue that is in the news middle of the past week, economic incentives. The House leadership rolled out an economic incentive bill. House Democrats had already introduced one. What do you make of all this? Where are we in terms of recruiting businesses?
We have seen in the past a North Carolina chamber that is very much in favor of incentives. We know that we have, at least on the Democrat side, have always wanted to be more cautious and make sure that if we're offering this money to potential businesses, that we are able to see the results. And then if we don't see the results, have an ability to claw back the money that we have given or have promised to give. I'm seeing some similar kinds of proposals in the legislation that's being offered this session. I'm not sure how it will be welcomed in the lay of the land this time. I think that from our standpoint, we know that we need things like film incentives. We know that we need things like historic tax credits. But how that will all play out and what combination of legislation will pass is really kind of hard to say at this point.
Were you surprised, given that Governor McCrory's, I guess, sort of newfound support for the historic tax credit after signing a bill that eliminated it, but he's been traveling all over the state talking a lot about that. Were you surprised that the House leadership proposal did not include that?
I guess I was and I wasn't, because this governor has seemed to really struggle with getting his own party to go along with his proposals. He will cheerlead on an issue around the state, but he doesn't seem to be bringing his party along with him in most cases.
Let's move to another controversial debate that happened this past week, a bill in the Senate. There will be or is a companion one in the House to allow magistrates and registers of deeds employees to refuse to marry same-sex couples. What do you make of that and the seeming refusal by some of the folks in the opposite party to obey a federal court decision?
That's a very important question, I think. That, to me, as you have seen in a lot of the taglines in the news, is sort of a license to discriminate. And I have thought from the beginning of this whole idea of allowing magistrates to opt out of this that it's discrimination, it's allowing discrimination, but it's also allowing sworn officers of the court to do less than what they have been hired to do. It's skirting their duties, if you will. And I think that it's wrong on many, many levels, but it does seem to be just another attempt at an end run around a Supreme Court decision that is so important to the lives of so many people in our state.
It was sort of startling during the debate this past week. One of the staff members was asked if this meant that magistrates could refuse to marry interracial couples or couples of different faiths. And it appeared that the response was, yes, indeed, that was possible. And I wondered what kind of message that sends to the people in the state and the rest of the country.
Absolutely. I think that if you look at this in terms of the potential for discriminatory behavior, it opens the door wide for any kind of discrimination that you'd want to throw in there. If for some reason the magistrate had a particular bad feeling about the couple that was standing in front of him, could he or she just opt out of doing their job? I think that that has some really terrible implications.
Another major issue before the General Assembly and the governor is the continuing push for Medicaid expansion. I know you have been a proponent of that. Where do you make of where we are in terms of expanding Medicaid to provide health care for more people and the governor's decision to delay any proposal?
Well, Chris, I had an opportunity to speak with some Ukrainian physicians last week in Asheville, and they had done a lot of visiting around to different hospitals and medical type facilities, and they were interested in this whole question too. And what I suggested to them, and I'll suggest to you, is that it looks like by delaying a decision that it is sort of delaying it until we get to the next election season, because as potentially harmful as this decision is to elderly, disabled, children, the health care of so many of our population in North Carolina, it looks like it's going to become an even more political decision on the part of the governor, because he's just kicking it down the road.
And we haven't talked yet about education, which I know is near and dear to your heart. The Supreme Court is this past week heard arguments in the voucher case, and the budget is beginning to be put together. The governor's budget is coming. What do you hope that your colleagues and the General Assembly as a whole will do for public schools this year?
Well, I think it's going to be difficult, because we are facing, at best, a $271 million shortfall. And I think if predictions hold, I think that it'll be even more than that. And all signs seem to be pointing toward attention toward higher education cuts. We saw the decision just this past week by the commission that was looking at the different centers of education within the UNC system to shut down three centers, none of which were funded by state monies, and all of which had an incredible ability to broaden education and to leverage grant dollars for North Carolina, you know, not to mention our intellectual influence in the country as a whole. And we are seeing the continuation of the chipping away at higher ed. And I think that with the shortfall, we're going to see more of that happen.
And finally, before I let you go, you mentioned the election, and North Carolina appears to be a roughly evenly divided state, both in terms of political party and philosophy, and yet there are supermajorities for the Republicans in the House and the Senate. There's a push now for redistricting reform. How important is that, do you think, for the long-term future of our political system?
I think it's extremely important, Chris. When we take the right to decide who the elected officials are away from the electorate, we're doing a terrible disservice to our citizens. And I know that this is something that gets tossed back and forth depending on which party's in power. But I believe, and it is the proof is in this bipartisan-sponsored legislation that we hope will move forward to make an independent redistricting commission. I think that that in itself says that both sides of the aisle are ready to do something about this. Everybody knows that the demographics in North Carolina are changing, and that whatever party is in charge and the districts that are drawn are not going to look the same at the 10-year mark at the decennial census as they did in the previous one. And I think that both sides are seeing that some balance needs to occur in the drawing of those lines. And I am hopeful that we can see passage of this bill and take the power away from the politicians and put it where it belongs, into the hands of the electorate.
Well, let's hope that happens this year. And Representative Fisher, thanks for all you're doing in Raleigh, and we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Chris. It's always a pleasure.
Up next, what North Carolina voters are thinking about the 2016 election. Stay with us.